Hello, I'm your host, Luke, and oh boy. Today we're talking about concussions, CTE, and are they ethical? Is it even worth continuing to play all these sports that are showing such high rates of concussions that, you know, once you get a concussion or multiple ones, that doesn't go away. It affects you for the rest of your life. I have multiple coworkers that have had multiple concussions, and most of them were from football. One ironically was from running and falling, I guess. Shout out to family. Didn't know that. But they, when you think of concussions, who do you think of? Football players, right? In the NFL. But there's significant science and investigations that, you know, there's plenty of people getting them in football, baseball, soccer, rugby, ice hockey. It's what would you say, an epidemic, or would you say it's like that's just part of playing the game? I'd say, you know, maybe we should at least evaluate what we're doing and give it a second thought, or like, you know, like maybe we shouldn't play football or something. But I'm going to be citing each of my sources before I read from them. So the first one comes to us from NortonHealthcare.com/ NSH concussion filer final, NAFC.pdf. Could it be a concussion? All concussions are serious. All concussions are brain injuries. Concussions can occur without loss of consciousness. Knowing the signs of concussion can prevent further injury or death. Are you experiencing these symptoms? Headache, neck pain, balance problems or dizziness, double or fuzzy vision, nausea, vomiting, hearing problems or ringing in the ears, confusion, drowsiness, feeling sluggish, concentration or memory issues? Is a teammate experiencing these signs? Appears dazed or stunned? Is confused about the assignment? Forgets plays? Is unsure of the game, score, or opponent? Moves clumsily? Answers questions slowly? Loses consciousness? Shows behavior or personality changes? Can't recall events prior to or after being hit. Unequal sized pupils. I mean, basically any hit or blow to the head could be a concussion, right? And like when your brain is healing, it's like a you know, it's like a bruise that stays on your brain. You know, it's like there's a reason why our why we have such a thick skull wrapped around our brains. We're not, you're not meant to get hit in the head or hit in the head repeatedly. It's not good. So now we get to something that can't be properly diagnosed until after the person has passed on. It's called CTE, which is the shortened form of chronic traumatic encephalopathy. CTE is a progressive brain condition that's thought to be caused by repeated blows to the head and repeated episodes of concussion. And this comes to us from nhs.uk/conditions/CTE. It's particularly associated with contact sports such as boxing or American football. So, you know, Jake Paul and Logan Paul probably have multiple ones, which, you know, that sucks. Most of the available studies are based on ex-athletes because, like I said, to be properly diagnosed with CTE, they have to cut you open. That's the, I actually have a coworker that he's afraid he's in the first stages of CTE. CTE was previously known as punch drunk syndrome and dementia pugilistica, but these terms are no longer used because it's now known that the condition is not limited to ex-boxers. There's still some debate about how common CTE is and how it should be diagnosed. Currently, there are only supportive treatments that are available. And research is ongoing to find a reliable technique to diagnose the condition. So, symptoms of CTE. It varies between individuals, but tends to be similar to those of other types of degenerative brain conditions, particularly Alzheimer's disease. I was listening to a YouTube video today by some doctors, and when they were looking at these brains that have been donated post-mortem, it looked like they were saying that the brain had shrunk somehow. CTE usually begins gradually several years after receiving repetitive blows to the head or repeated concussions. The symptoms affect the functioning of the brain and eventually lead to dementia. Typical symptoms include short-term memory loss, changes in mood, increasing confusion and disorientation, difficulty thinking, and as the condition progresses, further symptoms may include slurred speech, significant memory problems, Parkinsonism, which is another word for the typical symptoms of Parkinson's, including tremors, slow movements, and muscle stiffness, and difficulty eating or swallowing. But that is rare. So, causes of CTE. Any prolonged activity that involves repeated blows to the head or recurrent episodes of concussion are thought to increase the risk of getting CTE. But CTE and concussions are separate conditions. Many people who are concussed do not go on to develop CTE, but evidence suggests a pattern of repeated minor head injuries increases the risk. So the people most at risk are athletes with a history of repetitive mild traumatic brain injury, such as boxing or martial arts, American football, football, rugby, military vets, people with the history of repeated head injuries, including self-injury, victims of assault, or poorly controlled epilepsy that results in repeated head trauma, which, oh my God. So, once again, I am not a medical doctor, but it says when to get medical advice. Talk to your general practitioner if you're worried about your memory. Memory problems can also be caused by depression, stress, medications, other health problems. Sadly, there is currently no test to diagnose CTE based on besides your history. You can also get brain scans and CTE. The changes to the brain do not always show up on routine brain scans or may be similar to other conditions. This means the only way of confirming CTE is postmortem, like I was saying. Research has found that the changes in the brain associated with CTE are different from those seen in Alzheimer's, but both conditions are associated with shrinking of the brain, atrophy, and the presence of neurofibrillary tangles that contain a protein called tau. The most widely used tests are MRIs and CAT scans. Treating it. The treatment is based around supportive treatments. So there is no really treatment. Like, you just get worse. And the only way to prevent CTE is to avoid repetitive head injuries. Like, you know, I've always been on the bigger end. I'm almost 6 foot myself, around 220 pounds. And, you know, people always ask me, "Oh, Luke, you must have done." People always thought I was, or always ask, "Oh, did you do wrestling in high school?" No. You know what I did? I was in two plays in school. I was Sir Andrew Agu Cheek in You Can't Take It With You, and that was in Twelfth Night. And then I was Henderson, something, you know, the tax guy in You Can't Take It With You. But I was Sir Andrew Agu Cheek in Twelfth Night. I can tell you it would be almost impressive to get a concussion if you're doing that in, you know, plays. But, yeah. I was a nerd in high school, believe it or not. So as far as I can tell, I never got any concussions. I did taekwondo for 6 years, but even when we did sparring, I mean, like, you were only meant to, like, tap the person's headgear. You know, like, you're wearing full padding, and towards the end, you had to wear a chest protector, too. I don't know. So, I found a interesting thing. It's called the Concussion Protocol and Return to Participation Protocol Overview from June 22nd, 2018 from NFL.com/player health and safety, yada, yada, yada. The NFL Head, Neck, and Spine Committee, a board of independent and NFL-affiliated physicians and scientists, developed this in 2011. It is reviewed each year to ensure players are receiving care that reflects the most up-to-date medical consensus. I can't speak tonight. On the identification, diagnosis, and treatment of concussions. So, concussion game day checklist. When a player receives an impact to the head, the player goes on to the concussion protocol. If the player exhibits or reports symptoms or signs suggestive of a concussion or stinger, a nerve pinch injury, or the team's yada, 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 or Booth UNC initiates the protocol. Then the player must be immediately removed to the sideline or stabilized on the field to undergo the concussion assessment. And they have a checklist. And you can look at these yourself. Like, I just typed in, what, NFL. Here, I'll do it right now. So, on you, go to YouTube.com. Go to NFL concussion. Yeah, so I literally just typed in NFL concussion into the search bar. And the very first video has 153,000 views. And it's called NFL Scariest Concussions. And you can see for yourself, like, how brutal some of these hits are. It's not good. They're, you know, viewer discretion is advised, but it's a sobering thing to see when these people are, like, just getting smashed against each other. Like, yeah, like, I'll watch car crash compilations all day, every day, but, like, these concussion compilations are brutal, man. So, so the NFL on this website added a section called Improvements to the Concussion Protocol. For the 2018 season, the Head, Neck, and Spine Committee made additional improvements to the concussion protocol, and I'd like to read some of them. Added a third UNC who will monitor the broadcast video and audio feeds of each game from the spotter's booth and notify on-field UNCs of possible head, neck, or spine injuries. Define impact, seizure, and fencing responses as independent signs of potential loss of consciousness, representing, quote, no-go criteria under the current protocol. Players who display either of these signs at any time shall be removed from play and may not return to the game. Requiring an evaluation for all players demonstrating gross motor instability. God. Officials, teammates, and coaching staffs have been instructed to take an injured player directly to a member of the medical team for appropriate evaluation. Requiring all players who undergo any concussion evaluation on game day to have a follow-up evaluation conducted the following day by a member of the medical staff. Oh, yeah. How long does NFL health care last? So the NFL's health insurance only lasts 5 years after retirement. Players who lasted fewer than 3 seasons don't qualify for it at all. But the most serious health consequences of a football career often don't manifest for a decade or more. They're talking about CTE. So, like, they're, you know, this is just like that WWE episode where, what's his name? John Oliver did a really smashing segment on it where, like, that NFL health insurance is, like, literally just, like, a almost, to me, just for show. Because, like, this CTE, like, it goes on for, they said it's a gradual development. It's not like, oh, you had 7 concussions, the very next day you're, you know, going to start having these symptoms. No, it's not like that. It's, you know, you're going to develop these down the line 10, 15, 20 years. And it's gradual. People, you know, notice like you act different, or, you know, one person I talked to, they had developed a, for lack of a better word, anger management problems, whatever. So then here's the return to participation protocol that the NFL put up. Every NFL player diagnosed with a concussion must follow a 5-step process before being cleared to fully practice or participate in an NFL game. It was developed from internationally accepted guidelines, ensures that each player receives consistent treatment. Each player and each concussion is unique. There's no set time frame for current concussive injury. After a player has progressed through the 5-step process and is cleared for full participation, he must be seen and separately cleared by an INC, jointly approved by the NFL and NFLPA, who is not affiliated with any NFL club. Until cleared by this independent physician, a player may not return to contact practice or play in an NFL game. So the return to participation protocol, phase 1, symptom limited activity, number 2, aerobic exercise, number 3, football specific exercise, number 4, club-based non-contact training drills, number 5, full football activity / clearance. I mean, they're, you know, like, in my opinion, it's just all for show, because, like, to me, they only developed that because of the, like, massive lawsuit that they, I mean, for gosh sakes, there's a NFL lawsuit website. Yeah, so it's www.nflconcussionsettlement.com. Then they have a reports and statistics summary report that you can view / download. So I'm pulling from that on the PDF. NFL settlement program summary report as of 10/11/2021, and I'm recording this on October 14th, 2021. There are 20,560 registrations. 77% are retired players, 7% are representative claimants, and 16% are derivative claimants. This is sad to read. Over 3,300 claims of monetary awards have been submitted, and I guess that doesn't mean they've been paid out, but Section 4, qualifying diagnosis asserted in monetary award claims, 124, this is out of those 20,000 people, 124 died from CTE, 61 had ALS, 569 developed Alzheimer's, 198 had Parkinson's, 817 had level 2 diagnosis, 1,200 had level 1.5, and 262 had no qualifying diagnosis. And then they just oh my god, guys, wow, I didn't know it was that big. Wow. So on the very last page 8 on this PDF from 10/11/21, the NFL has paid out a lot of money. Notices of monetary award. So this amount was paid out to 1,343 people. The amount paid out was $925 million. And that level 2 and level 1.5 were diagnosed. The levels were neurocognitive impairment. Wow. So those were the claims made, and then the paid out was to 1,482 people, and that was a total of $821 million. God. One thing I would like to know is if the NFL, like, actually admit any wrongdoing. Did the NFL admit to CTE at all? On March 14th, 2016, for the first time ever, this is...
Do you think there is a link between...
On March 14th, 2016, according to the New York Times, by Ken Belson, in perhaps its clearest admission that football can cause degenerative brain disease, the NFL's top health and safety official admitted Monday that there was a link between the sport and chronic traumatic encephalopathy, a brain disease found in dozens of retired players. In a roundtable discussion on Capitol Hill, Jeff Miller, the NFL's senior vice president for health and safety policy, was asked by Representative Jan Skakowsky, whether, quote, there's a link between football and degenerative brain disorders like CTE. And he answered, the answer to that is certainly yes, Miller said. Miller went on to say that Dr. Ann McKee and her colleagues at Boston University and found the disease in many players who died. The disease is only diagnosed only posthumously, can be identified by a buildup of a tau protein in parts of the brain. And he said that there are still questions about the prevalence of the disease. Tau protein in the brain. So tau is a protein that helps stabilize the internal skeleton of nerve cells, neurons in the brain. And this internal skeleton has a tube-like shape, which nutrients and other essential substances travel to reach different parts of the neuron. So tau protein and neurodegenerative diseases, but it seems like that's linked to I mean, this isn't the most fun thing to read, if you ask me, or talk about, because these poor people got. Now we move over to baseball. This is from Consultant 360. Concussions may linger among professional baseball players. Professional baseball players may not be fully recovered when they return to play after a concussion, a new study finds. I mean, what does that sound like? That sure sounds like the NFL all over again. Researchers found that in the first weeks of play after time off for a concussion, major league players performed worse than players coming back from non-medical leaves of absence. One of the things we're always trying to understand is what is the impact of concussions on anything someone does. Baseball provides researchers with a unique opportunity. The thing that's nice about baseball is that there are so many statistics kept on each player. For the study published online March 17th in the American Journal of Sports Medicine, the researchers used information on MLB players from a performance database and disabled list records. They found 66 concussions from 07 to 13. After eliminating players with missing data, repeat injuries, or leaves longer than 35 days. There were 68 times players took bereavement or paternity leave. Players with concussion were off the field for an average of about 11 days, compared to an average of about 5 days for those out on bereavement or paternity leave. They took 5 whole days for when their kid is born. 5 days. I can't even imagine that. You know what my dad did? My mom and dad, the morning of when I was born, went to get donuts. My mom ate a donut. She told my dad that I think she said her water broke. And then they rushed to the hospital, and my mom had to get a C-section, but that's besides the case. the very next day, my dad was back to work. So, you know, it is what it is. Back to that. After accounting for the players' performance before their leaves, their playing positions, and the time they spent off the field, the researchers found that players with concussions performed worse in the 2 weeks following their return compared to those out on leave. For example, the batting average, which is the number of hits a player has divided by their number of times to bat, was .235 for players returning from concussion compared to .266 for players returning from the others. We would speculate that the concussion affects a few brain pathways involved with the skill of hitting a ball coming at you 90 miles per hour. MLB's current concussion protocol includes neurological testing for athletes before the season to compare with test results after concussions. It also includes a 7-day disabled list for concussions and protocols for allowing players to return to play. So, you know, each of these leagues is going to have different protocols when someone gets a concussion. Like, seems the NFL probably has the most up-to-date and current one because there's so much focus on it. Like, when I think concussions, like I've said, I think of football. I don't think of all these other sports that also get them. This guy, Dr. Gary Green, went on to say, "We feel that the fact that the rate of concussion is very low in MLB, most people don't return to this disabled lift after they've been clear, is pretty good. We also track these people when they return to play to make sure they're not experiencing any symptoms." And then he goes on to say, "Problem with the paper is it has major mythological flaws that prevent it from being a whole lot of value." So why'd they even do this study? One of the other people that participated said, "This is a great example when we think people are recovered and they may not be." And the same guy goes on to say, "We need to do more research to figure out when to put people back on the field." So one of my coworkers is a big soccer fan, and he said FIFA has a concussion problem. This is from Slate. "FIFA's rule changes won't solve soccer's concussion problem. Concussions were a fixture in the tournament 4 years ago and likely will be again." So now we're getting to the World Cup. That, I guess, is every 4 years. I don't know. I don't care. I don't really like soccer, to be honest with you. My brother played. What did he play, Aaron? You played varsity soccer? No, you played junior varsity. He was good, too. You know, my brother was always 5 steps above me. So according to this article, a research letter published in the Journal of the AMA last summer found that the 2014 World Cup had 81 head collisions in total, and 67 of those, about one per game, involved players with 2 or more concussion symptoms. Wow. One guy soldiered on for about 15 minutes after his concussion in the World Cup final, before the German medical team finally helped him off the field. He later admitted that he had had no recollection of the match itself. Wow. FIFA is corrupt. And sad. If you don't believe me, watch the FIFA episodes that John Oliver did. That, wow, those were crazy. Frustratingly, concussion protocols were not followed in the majority of cases. FIFA weathered severe criticism about its concussion management practices after that tournament. The criticism only intensified after a high-profile concussion in the Women's World Cup the following year. Helping to avoid another PR disaster. Well, I mean, it's FIFA. What do you expect? FIFA is introducing 3 rule changes for referees and doctors for this month's tournament. First, referees will be allowed to stop games for up to 3 minutes so medical teams can better assess players suspected of having concussions. 3 minutes. 3 minutes. Okay, guys, run out onto the field. You got your 3 minutes of allotted time to see whether that guy that's wobbling around is just acts like that in general or something's wrong with him. Second, FIFA has mandated that team physicians have the final say on whether a player can stay in a game. And third, it will allow a second team physician to have access to in-match video replays of player injuries to assist with decision-making off the pitch. Wow. Wow. The JAMA research letter found that medical teams already took between 15 and 180 seconds to assess head injuries in the most recent World Cup. Most experts recommend that players with any suspicion for concussion undergo a neurological exam that generally takes 10 minutes to perform. So this article goes on to say that they're not doing enough. And my coworker that, you know, watches a lot of soccer, he said that, you know, obviously how people are getting these concussions is, you know, in soccer, what are you allowed to hit with? You're allowed to hit the ball with your head and you're allowed to kick it. If you touch it with your hands, you get a penalty, right? So, you know, these are very competitive and whatnot. So, there's no wonder there's people getting concussions when they're playing soccer. Concussions in NHL. The source is ncbi.nlm.nih.gov, and it's just a article entitled Concussions in the NHL, a narrative review of the literature from the Journal of the Canadian Chiropractic Association. What's the date on this? December 2014. And I'll just read the abstract. Ice hockey has been identified as a sport with a high risk for concussions. Given the health sequelae associated with the injury, a great deal of attention has been placed on its diagnosis, management, and return to play protocol. Highest level of ice hockey in North America is played in the NHL, and concussions pose a serious threat to the health of the players and the game itself. Fortunately, the scientific literature on concussions in ice hockey is derived mostly from research conducted on youth and amateur levels of play, leaving a gap in the knowledge at the professional level. Concussion incidents. Concussions occur at all skill and age levels in ice hockey and have been reported to account for 2 to 14% of all ice hockey injuries, and 15 to 30% of all hockey head injuries. While epidemiological data at the NHL level is sparse, small but growing body of literature is beginning to emerge. Two guys studied concussions in the NHL using data from published media reports. Authors justify their use. Authors found that there's a mean of 12 concussions per season from 86 to 87 and to 95 to 96. From 96 to 97 and to 2001 to 2002, there was a mean of 56 concussions per season. Wow. That is crazy. To date, only one detailed study has emerged from the NHL concussion program. Wow. That is sad. Concussion risk factors in the NHL. Most commonly investigated injury risk factors include age, session type, level of play, player position, and the presence slash absence of body checking. I mean, anybody, I'm sure anybody looks up hockey fights on YouTube. I mean, those are brutal. Wow. I mean, they're also entertaining to watch, but maybe that's just me. I don't know. It goes on to say that it has been hypothesized that concussion incidence and severity will continue to increase if athletes continue to grow bigger, faster, stronger, built to last longer. Fatigue has been shown to increase injury risk in both rugby and soccer, and it has been reported that concussions are more likely to occur under fatigued conditions in female ice hockey. Male youth and junior A ice hockey time on ice has been implicated as a risk factor for concussion and injuries in general. Those who played more than 15.22 minutes per game had an increased likelihood of suffering a concussion. Wow. That is crazy. So the highest was the study from 2010 to 2011, and that was 80, a mean of 80 per season. Another one was from 2003, a study, 97 concussions per season. Wow. That's a lot of people stumbling around confused. That's not good. So, rugby also has a problem with concussions. Rugby players wear far fewer pads. This is from The Atlantic. But it's those pads that enable and embolden someone to hit another player with greater speed and force. And it's the sudden stopping, not the impact itself, that causes the brain to crash into the side of the skull, causing a concussion. Rugby players don't wear helmets, but rather scrum caps, which do little more than prevent cauliflower ear. This next one came from a sports fan on Reddit. Rugby doesn't have a system of downs like football, so it's not as important to contest every single yard. In rugby, it's more important that the man simply gets tackled. It's okay if he drags you a yard or two as he doesn't score. In football, that extra yard might mean a new set of downs, so you get defensive players impacting players hard and high, trying to stop the runner's forward movement immediately. So these people were arguing between which sport is better or safer, rugby or football. This guy from Reddit said that rugby is safer. Quote, that said, I believe rugby is a far better sport than its American cousin. The referee definitely rules the roost. The lack of hard helmets more or less eliminates the possibility of a Daryl Stringley-like incident. No endless list of specialists who can be introduced whenever. No TV breaks at all, and the beer and banter afterwards can't be toppled. Concussions in rugby. So this is just a quick study. Concussions account for 25% of all days lost from rugby participation. The incident rate for all injuries was 46 per 100 player sessions. This is from NCBI. Results. 17 concussions were recorded during the three seasons of rugby. For comparison, the total number of injuries was 69. The incident rate for concussions was 3.8 per 1,000 athlete exposures. 12 of the injuries occurred in games, and 5 occurred in practices. So apparently, for grading concussions, there's a grade 1, 2, and 3. Apparently, someone that had a grade 3 event concussion was characterized by a 5 to 6 minute loss of consciousness accompanied by disorientation and mild convulsions. So you have this player that is out cold and then he's twitching out on the field. Like, oh my God. Ugh. I couldn't imagine watching that. Ugh. I'm glad I don't watch sports. So yeah, this has been one man's take. Solely my opinion, and I cited all my sources, and you can go read them yourself, yada, yada, yada. Just my opinion. Don't play sports at all. Do stuff that you probably won't get injured in, like make YouTube videos or go for a walk or cross the street or run into oncoming. Yeah, don't do that. yeah. Thanks for listening, guys. This has been your host, Luke. Like this video if you liked it. Please leave reviews on. Tell me your thoughts. Like, I'm almost at 300 downloads, and like, I've had no feedback. Like, that drives me crazy. I mean, like, do you like it? What do you want to hear? What topics do you want me to cover? Is my voice annoying? Are my guests annoying? You know, like, I don't know. Did I offend you? Did I hurt your feelings? Tell me how your day was. I don't know. Any feedback is welcome feedback as long as I'm concerned. I mean, for God's sakes, I've been doing YouTube for 3.5 years now. So, I mean, trust me, my self-confidence is already at a all-time low. So, probably can't go much lower. But, hey, there's always next time, right? This has been your host, Luke. Thanks for listening to Reptilian Insider News. I hope you guys have a great weekend. I know I'm going to. I want to do my next podcast on... What do I want to do? The Kobe Bryant crash, helicopter crash. That's going to be an interesting one. Have a good night.